My name is Mark Thomas, and you guys have braved the cold winds here in Texas all the way out here to dorm 4, so you guys are committed. That's what I know about you. You're committed. I teach high school math. It's everybody's favorite subject, I know. And I teach in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I've taught high school for 14 years. If I did not teach high school math, what I would probably do is I'd be a financial planner. That's my passion, is helping people out with their finances. God hasn't led me all the way there yet, but I enjoy helping people out with their finances. So, a couple things about me, just so you know where I'm coming from. I'm a high school teacher in Oklahoma. My wife stays home with our boys. We have 4 boys, ages 10, 8, 6, and 4. I'm a high school teacher in the state of Oklahoma, the 48th ranked state in pay. Okay, so I'm not coming at you telling you, hey, if you've got a lot of money, this is how you deal with it. I'm coming at you telling you, if you don't have much money, you can make it. Okay, you can survive, you can exist, you can not drown. Okay, so hopefully some of the things that we talk about today will just hit you right on. And if you've got a lot of money, great. Hopefully the things we talk about today will hit you right on as well. One of the biggest reasons that people get divorced is fighting over finances. Now, you can argue with me on that, that's fine. But if next year, when I see you, if you got divorced from your spouse because you guys could not agree financially, then that's one too many divorces in your family that happened as a result of financial difficulty. Okay? So whether or not you agree, it's the number one reason or the number 7 reason. It is a big reason out there, and what I want us to do is try to encourage you how to handle your finances as well. What we're going to do is we are going to split up into groups, grab 3-4 guys right around you, and for those who were here at the very before it actually started, I said don't read what's on the pages yet. Okay, so if you followed my instructions, you're right on. What I want you to do is the first piece of paper, front and back, I want you to read together as a group. You can read one part, the next guy can read another part, and so forth. Don't go on to the second piece of paper, okay? Just read the first piece of paper, front and back. At the back of that first page, I have a place there for notes, observations, things you want to jot down, ideas that you have or that you share with each other, okay? I'll holler at y'all in a little bit. All right, guys, go ahead and get back in your rows, and we'll keep discussing some of this, okay? Go ahead and get back in your rows. Okay, it was a great discussion. I kind of let y'all keep going longer and longer and longer because it kept being great discussion. What I want to encourage you to do is that person that was really stimulating you mentally on the financial topics, find their name and visit with them this evening after the service. One of the most interesting things that I've noticed is, as I've made myself available to discuss finances with people at this workshop, more people come talk to me about finances than quiet time or scripture memory, because there's not a whole lot of people out there going, hey, come talk to me about finances. I love to talk to you about finances. I'll help you with your budget. Let's go. So if you want to have a ministry to people here or people back at home, open yourself up to talk to them about finances. The other thing I'll mention, Noah back here, I'm going to say something that I heard him say. He said, man, it's pretty obvious whenever you see it in black and white. Yeah, when you see this scenario, there's gloom and doom for Paul. Will's sitting okay. So I think it's very striking the difference here between these two. I'm going to maybe offend some of you all. Some of the things I'm going to hammer on, the topics, the philosophies, the principles, I'm going to hammer over and over again. So if I offend you, get ready, because I'm going to offend you several times. Okay? So, warning right there. Gene Moore in The Godly Man says, if you are short of money, answering the following questions might reveal to you the reason why this is true. And he had 4 questions here. Do you really need it? Is God testing your faith? Pay attention to this next one. Did I misspend the money that God has already given me? 4th, have I violated the financial principles? Okay. It's in Gene Ward's Godly Man book. Did you really need it? Is God testing your faith? Did you misspend the money God has already given you? And have you violated financial principles? Is that why you're short of money? Okay. Let's take a look. First of all, a couple of quick comments on the exercise. Yes? That's a good question. Have you violated financial principles? Any quick comments about the scenario? You guys had great discussion on it. I wish I was in every one of your groups at the same time.
Gene also said, use it up, wear it out, fix it up, or do without.
That's right. And I don't know if he's the first one that said it, but I've heard him say it many times.
I met him a long time ago.
Yeah.
Quite a guy.
Amazing. Any other comments on the scenario that you guys read? We're going to dissect the scenario a little bit more on that second piece of paper, so we'll talk about it a little bit more as we go. All right, let's go ahead and take a look. Go ahead and flip the page there. You now get to look at the second piece of paper. Let's talk a little bit about buying houses. I mentioned that Will saved up for a while, was able to make a down payment on a house. He didn't have to have PMI or MIP, which is mortgage insurance, which the bank makes you get if you don't put 20% down on your house. The insurance is not to cover you. It's to cover the bank if you default on your loan. So they're making you take out a loan or paying insurance payments to cover the bank's interest, vested interest. So Will's able to get a cheaper amount, also by going on a 20-year note instead of a 30-year note. Take a look at the housing summary here. Will's payment was $673. It was actually $573, but he was able to kick in an extra $100 a month compared to Paul's, which was $746 because he was financing the whole amount of the loan over a 30-year time period. Okay, guys, stay away from 30-year notes. Go to a 20-year note. Okay? It's not that much more. Go to a 20-year note. If you got to drop down in the size of your house or the neighborhood that you're going to live in or something like that, go to a 20-year note. They also have 15-year notes. There's just not that much difference between a 15-year note and a 20-year note for the increase in the principal. But 20 to 30, there's a big advantage to going 20. The outstanding balance, $88,000 for Paul, $51,000 for Will. That's what they still owe on their house after the end of this 10-year time period. Okay. So 10 years had passed. Paul still owes 20 years worth. 10 years passed. Will only owes 8 years because he was paying an extra $100 a month, and he only had a 20-year note. So that's why those numbers are there. The house value, if the housing market drops 15%, the value of the house now is $85,000. Not that housing markets ever decline in value, but it could happen, which leaves the equity that Paul and Will have separately. Paul would be in the hole $3,000. To sell his house, he would need to come up with $3,000 to cover the loan that he has on the house. And that's after being in it for 10 years. Will, on the other hand, has $28,000 cash in hand to help him with his move to his new job across the state. Okay. Car summary. These are actual values on Chevy Malibu. I just picked a vehicle. Looked up KBB.com. Paul buying a new car, $22,000 for a new Chevy Malibu. Okay, for you Ford people, substitute whatever Ford car is equivalent. Not that there is one. But Will, on the other hand, buys used vehicles, $7,500 for a nice used vehicle. It has some miles on it, okay? And you can see the monthly payments there. Will doesn't make any monthly payments because he saved up and bought it with cash. Both of them decline. Will's declines some. Paul's will decline a great amount. And those are actual dollar amounts that I looked up at KBB. If Paul needs to sell his car, he's upside down $7,000. If Will needs to sell his car, fine. He can sell it for $5,000, and he doesn't owe anything on it. He's got $5,000 in his pocket. Okay. Anybody in here know a will in your life or in your sphere of influences? Anybody in here know a Paul? Okay. I know several of each kind. The identity of the people have been protected in this, but in every single one of these things that I'm talking about, I know people in each camp. Housing, cars, everything that we're going to go through. Okay. Last Saturday, I bought a vehicle. The vehicle was slightly used. 126,000 miles was on the vehicle, but it was, you know, still running great. That's the vehicle I went and bought. Paid cash for it. Okay. Never owed on a car. So you can do it. And again, I'll remind you, I'm a high school math teacher in the state of Oklahoma, the 48th lowest paying state for teachers. Okay? I'm going to contrast that with somebody else that I know. A lady, she was diagnosed with cancer. She had a car payment. She did not have enough credit to be able to finance it, so she actually had somebody else sign it. Not even co-sign it. It was under this other person's name. The lady with cancer passed away. Her daughter now has the car. Except she already had a car. So now she has two cars. Two car payments to make. Because she had a car payment herself. And she's trying to sell her deceased mother's car. So she doesn't have to make any more car payments on it. Okay? If you play with snakes, you will get bit. So, another thing on that. Proverbs 17:18 talks about foolishness, as a lot of Proverbs does. You know what's foolish? To co-sign for another person. To become surety for another person. If you want to help the other person out financially, and you really want to help them out, buy them the car and walk away. Okay? But don't become surety for them. Do not pledge on another person's credit. The reason you have to pledge for them is because they're not worth the credit that they have. Financially, their word, their credit rating. Okay?
It's a good growth experience, so.
Yes.
Then whenever they call you, you say, hey, I don't do that.
I don't do that.
I got burned. I'm not doing that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Any other comments on housing or cars? Comments on housing or cars? Any other comments there on either one of those? Okay. Other debt. Oh, by the way, I do know people that are well off and still choose to have a car payment. And it really makes me scratch my head. And I know people that are fairly well off and think that they're well enough off to have car payments. Well, in my town that I live in, people are losing their jobs. And some of these people that are losing their jobs have been at that place for more than 20 years. Well, I've got this job. I can pay it off. I'll just have a car payment. No big deal. It fits in my budget. Yes?
Would you suggest, if you could save, if you have good enough savings, you know, saving up to buy a house, like, outright?
Yes. If you can get there, you go right ahead.
A small house.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time, though, we want to live in the house that our parents grew up in after they've spent 40 years working to get that house. And we think, oh, I just graduated from college. I deserve that house. Yeah. Yeah, save up and pay. And if you can't get all the way there, pay as much down as you can. Wait, put as much down as you can. If you can't afford it, look at a smaller house. Exactly.
If you couldn't afford pretty much doing what you just said, would you suggest renting? Or I guess renting
yeah.
is good.
You could find a place to rent that would be less expensive, and that difference, save it. And put that back for your future house. Exactly right.
You lose your job while you lost your deposit, probably.
That's right.
You walk away.
Yeah. But if you lose your job and you're overextended on your house payment, look out, because you owe the extra if you're under. Yes, Randy?
Better off carrying a liability type insurance saving some money back in case he wrecks his car or something and needs to fix it.
I think that there's, if you look at the numbers on it, it will vary for different things. For a lot of people, there's not a lot of difference between a comprehensive insurance policy and a liability policy, money-wise, per month. There's just really not that much difference. Now, if you have a certain kind of vehicle or a certain kind of driving history and there's a big gap, then, yeah, maybe it's better to do that liability insurance and then save the extra money that you would have.
Something else to look at when you do that is if Will totals that car out, what's it going to pay? What's that? You know, what's the insurance going to settle for on car back there? I got a huge shock with that and paid, $25 a month more to do it. And after paying that for 7 years on a van that was totaled, they come back and said, we're going to cut you a check for $1,600 because that's all the book says it's worth. Well, that van, I turned down 4 offers in the previous 3 months for over $3,000 each. But that's all the book said it was worth. And I mean, that was a real shock for me because I thought it would be worth what I could prove that it was actually worth.
They get to choose.
It didn't matter. They had a book, and that's all they were going to do. Yeah.
Will has the option, because he paid cash for his car, not to carry comprehensive or collision if he doesn't want.
Exactly right.
Where the other guy has to. He's forced to because he has a loan on the course, so you're forced to carry full coverage. I haven't carried collision on any of my cars in a long time. You know, I've got a 96 Toyota Camry, essentially perfect condition, but it's got, 225,000 miles on it, so I haven't carried collision. I do carry comprehensive because I know it's going to get hail on in Texas or I'm going to run into a deer. with both my last cars. I had a deer with one and I held on the other. So I do carry comprehensive, but it's not much.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I don't carry collision. Because the only thing you're responsible, if I fall asleep, run into a telephone pole, that's still not under collision. That's under comprehensive.
Okay.
It's only another accident with another vehicle.
But Will's also got an emergency fund to be able to go buy him another $2,000 or $3,000 car.
Exactly.
If he runs into the telephone pole and he doesn't cover it, he's got the money to take care of that.
Yeah, he does. Let's move on to some other fun debt to talk about. Credit cards. Paying the minimum payments, which is $200, on a $10,000 balance without adding any more debt. So you stopped using your credit card. You built up a $10,000 balance. If you pay the minimum payment, I'm on the second piece of paper. Where all the answers are. I'm on the answer page. It's at the back of the book. But you pay the minimum payment on a $10,000 balance, it could take you up to 50 years to pay off. Okay? Which means that you have to get aggressive about paying off debt. You have to be more aggressive than what the bank wants you to be. The average family carries $8,000 in credit card debt on a monthly basis. The median is $2,000. If you're a math person, you understand the difference between those. A $60 meal placed on a credit card could take 10 years to pay off if you're making minimum payments. Was that steak really that good? 10 years, you're paying for it 10 years later? Yeah. Yeah, you'll just puke it back up. Something.
Sprinkled gold dust on it, so it was worth it.
Student loans. 67% graduate with student loans. It's hard to get out of college without student loans, but it can be done. And the question is, are you going to be one of the 67%? Or are you going to be one of the 33%? Okay. The average balance on student loans when you graduate is $16,000 to $22,000. Had a friend, dog's name was Sally. And the bet was whether or not Sally would survive longer, the dog, or the loan with Sally Mae for student loans would survive longer. And it was a close call because it takes a long time to pay off that debt. I have a guy that I was met with on occasion, college kid, wanted to go to DTS. They turned him down because of the amount of debt he had. They said, you go, you lay out, you work, you reduce your debt, you come back to us. Okay? Having debt limits your options. It completely limits your options. Boats. I have no idea about boats, but if you want to sell it so you don't have payments, you have to find a buyer. And in this market right now, where it's kind of hard to sell things, when you're needing to sell it, I mean, Paul sure would like to sell that boat, but if he can't find a buyer, he's still sitting there making those payments. 401ks, if you borrow against your 401k, you must repay it within 60 days with interest in order to leave your workplace. Leave your workplace voluntarily or leave your workplace because you were fired or let go. It doesn't matter. If you no longer work with that company, you have 60 days from that time to repay your 401k plus the interest that you owed on it. Okay? I have a friend who the company's not doing well. They're laying off a lot of people. They bought a car using money out of their 401k because things were going well. If he loses his job, not only does he have problems because he lost his job, not only does he have financial difficulty because he doesn't have an income coming in anymore from the job, he also has to repay the loan within 60 days. It sounds like a really good idea, and you hear people all the time, borrow from your 401k. It's your money. You get to pay yourself back with interest. Okay? Debt is not good.
Question.
Yes?
What type of an investment, I guess, like how important do you think it is to have a 401k if you have that option?
Very.
I mean, I've been in mine for since I was 21, so I just haven't touched it or messed with it.
Yeah, and in my mind, 401ks are there for retirement, not for some quick little savings account or something like that. If I want a savings account to put down money for a house, I'm not putting in my 401k and then borrowing against it. My 401k is for my retirement. My IRAs, my Roth IRAs are for retirement. I think it's very, very important. We're going to look at some verses that talk about that too.
I'm curious like, what the Bible says about like how, like, because it's kind of like storing money for our future, but we don't know what our future is going to be.
And we'll look at some verses right along that.
Yes.
What's your opinion between the choice between a Roth IRA and a non-matched 401k though?
I would go with the Roth IRA. You get the portability. Yeah. Yeah. You get the you can choose what mutual fund
the way in versus the way out too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unless it's a Roth 401, then that's just as good.
Yep.
Most companies don't have that.
No.
I wish.
Emergency funds. You know, if you tell people you have an emergency fund, they think you're weird. Emergency funds are not cool. They're not hip until you need them. And then when you need them, you sure wish you would have had one. Okay? Most people suggest 3 to 6 months of your living expenses saved for the stormy times. Okay? 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, things were rocking along pretty good. So you go, okay, well, things are rocking along pretty good. I don't need an emergency fund. Well, you lost your job last week. Now you need an emergency fund. Oh, let's put one in place real quick. It doesn't work that way. Okay. I have an emergency fund. I've touched it. In the last 14 years, I've touched it 3 times to pull money out of. Okay. It's an emergency fund. Okay. If you want to have a savings account, put yourself a little savings account on the side. Emergency fund is different. Put it in there. Leave it alone. Don't touch unless you have to. Yes.
Maybe a silly question. Christmas time comes around.
Mm-hmm.
No. You spend any more money than normally? Do you pull money out of an emergency fund?
Absolutely not. Okay, I have a question for you.
Can you
predict when the next Christmas is going to be?
No. Well, I mean, early March.
Lord willing, yeah.
Okay, so if we're still here, if we live more than a year, you think there's going to be a Christmas time between now and next Keymans? I think there will be. I think I even know what day it's going to be on.
You're saying an additional Christmas fund?
If you need to put together an additional Christmas fund, you do it. Yeah, and I do that. I do that. I take money out, and I have an amount that we have predetermined. We're going to spend this much money on Christmas, no more. Okay? And we spend that money on Christmas. But it's not something that I pull out of an emergency fund.
It's separate.
And it could be your sock drawer, depending on how much money you spend on Christmas. Okay. Great question. Because a lot of people think that, in my opinion, a lot of people think that there are exceptions to, well, I can use the emergency fund for this and emergency fund for this. But really, plan ahead and let the emergency fund cover emergencies. Great question. Life insurance. If you're married and or have kids, get term life insurance. I do not sell any product, okay? Your insurance salesman might try to sell you whole life and universal life policies, okay? Some of my dad's friends sold him a whole life policy. And after paying on it for 25 years, he thought, after I visited with him, that wasn't really smart. The value of that policy compared to the amount that I put in, it wasn't a good return. It got a return, but not a very good one. Don't mix your insurance with savings. If you want to put together a mutual fund, a Roth IRA, a 401k, or something like that, some sort of savings, get a savings. Insurance, term insurance. Okay, do term life insurance. Okay. The salesperson is going to tell you that term life insurance is like renting, and whole life or universal life is like you own it. And basically what happens is term insurance, the only value that term insurance has for you is if you die, then your wife or beneficiary gets the value of that policy. It's a simple insurance. You die, they get it. Whole life or universal life has what's called a cash value with it. So along the way of you paying your premiums, and the difference in premiums is probably something like $20 for $250,000 of term life insurance, $20 a month, compared to $100 a month for whole life policy. My suggestion is take the $20, do term life insurance, and invest the $80 on your own on an investment, not on a whole life policy. Because that's what they do is they say, well, it's going to build up cash value and you'll get this policy. Keep them separate because they don't return as good as what they say. All right. Next page here. That's great, but my name's Paul. My ship is sinking. Now what am I going to do? Okay. The first rule of sinking ships is find the hole and plug it. Okay. The way you plug a hole is you use a budget. Designating where your money is going to instead of wondering where it went. Okay? And I talk to people about budgets quite a bit, and they go, well, I had to pull money out of this part of the budget and put it over here so my budget wasn't working for me. No, it worked just great. You recognized that you needed to move money from here to here instead of at the end of the month going, I don't have any money at all. I got 3 weeks left before I get another paycheck. Okay? Tools. What tools do you use? I don't care. Whatever works for you. If you like Quicken, use it. If you like, my dad uses a green ledger that's this big. Okay? Once each month. Next month, turn the page, go again. Okay? He carries it down to the penny every month. If you like the cash envelope system, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit, for certain expenses, use it. If you like a half a sheet of paper, use it. Yellow pad. I don't care. Whatever works for you, but find something that works. And it may take 3 months, 6 months of you trying budgets before you realize, oh, okay, I'm kind of starting to get the hang of this. Okay? So don't try it once and go, it doesn't work. Count on it not working. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been budgeting for more than 20 years. My budget still doesn't work sometimes. Yeah. Some things there. Date on the side you, the categories you're going to use, just as you figure out what date you're going to use them. Month that you're going to track spending, and the date that you're going to sit down with your spouse to plan the next month's spending. Before we leave today, some point as you're thinking through stuff, okay, yeah, by March 1st, we're going to sit down. Or by April 1st, we're going to sit down. Just put some dates out there of target dates of what you want to get done.
What do you mean? You mean month you'll start tracking the spending?
Yeah. Are you going to start tracking your spending March 1st to April 1st? Are you going to wait till summertime because of whatever reason? Put a month down that you think you're going to start tracking spending.
Do you advise to do it monthly then, every month?
It depends on how you get paid. I have friends that get paid bi-monthly. I have friends that get paid every other week. So however that works with you, and that depends on what bills you have also. If you have a house payment, the every other week thing, kind of, you got to figure out, okay, this has got to cover the house payment and stuff. So, budget categories. Yes.
I could, just to comment on what you said, I could
tell you what we do. I get paid on the 15th every month, and my wife works very little part time, so I'm basically 90% of our income. We sit down on the 16th because I work on commission, so a lot of times I don't know what my check's going to be, but we sit down on the 16th and we talk about it. And we say, okay, well, here's what we're given this month, and then divide out the budget from there, because otherwise, if we talk about it on the 1st, we've already spent half the money that we've already divided up elsewhere.
Yeah.
And when you say you're going to sit down on the 16th, it happens.
Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't matter that the kids are sick that day and the dog's barking, and give them some medicine, lay them down, throw the dog outside and sit down.
Yep. Yep.
But it's real easy to say, well, we'll just do it tomorrow. And before you know it, you're at the 1st and you're like, wait a minute.
What happened?
I've got a month's worth of bills and a week and a half's worth of income here. How am I going to make this work? Budgeting doesn't work.
No.
Then you got to find $500.
Exactly. Where'd I put that $500? Where'd it go?
You're over here gluing the credit card back again.
Budgets. Let me just explain quickly there. I don't care what categories you use. I just listed a whole bunch of categories that might be helpful for you to think about. My little smiley faces are things that I pay for in cash. In our household, we pay grocery items in cash. In our household, eat out money, food for eat out, we pay in cash. Entertainment, miscellaneous. Be careful about that miscellaneous category. It can get really big. You need more than one category in your budget. You cannot have a category of miscellaneous and call that your budget, okay? Potential budget busters. Car loans, school loans, credit cards. That's because that's all debt. Miscellaneous, okay? That's a potential budget buster in my household. Eating out is a potential budget buster in my household. Maybe for you and your wife, it's shoes. I don't know. Whatever it is, identify what your budget busters are. Medical bills, okay? Things like that. Figure out what it is that causes you problems. Rule on the budget is, whatever your total income is, your total budget cannot be more than that. Okay? Budget and spend less than or equal to what you make.
And I think you kind of said this just a little bit, but you've got to work it every month. Because while I know that Christmas is coming in December every year, there are a lot of birthdays mm-hmm. that happen. And a lot of them, they get piled together.
Yeah.
And so, and then they got friends. And so what do you know? We got four birthday parties in this month. And when we first got married and we started trying to make a budget, I tried to average everything out over 12 months. And then just shock and awe, nothing ever worked.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It has to be every month. You got to figure it out. Figure out what's going on that month in particular that's maybe unique to other months and things.
There's also creative ways of getting around. We've talked a lot about Christmas. There's creative ways of getting around Christmas gifts. Some families draw names, and mm-hmm. you buy for that person. What we did one year, you get 30, 40 people in a family, that's a whole lot of Christmas gifts. That's a whole lot of stress and strain and whatever. But what we did one year is we did family gifts. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we made a plate of cookies. The kids helped out in it. We had family time from it. And the kids made a card that we put with it, and we handed the family, this is what my family gives to your family. And it costs a couple bucks for, the ingredients for the cookies or brownies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can save a ton of money.
You sure can. We've done family gifts lately with games, where we buy the family a game, $10, $15 game, and that's for the whole family. So those are great ideas.
Another idea on the same line there, we did this one year, as I come from a really large family also, and we said we're going to draw names, but instead of buying that person a present, we're going to go get an angel off an angel tree and give the presents in that person's name. Mm-hmm. And it taught all the kids the value of giving. I mean, our kids had everything they needed.
Yeah.
I mean, we were at the point of everything they got. And Christmas, we were yard selling in early March. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And we sit down and quite literally all went to the store at one time. And that poor little Christmas tree was standing there and loaded when we got there. And when we left, there was two names left hanging on it. And I told my wife, I said, I really feel stupid just leaving two names on there. I mean, they're just hanging there by themselves. So we plucked them off and bought them too. But that was a great lesson for all of our kids. And I mean, that was without a doubt in the last 20 years, the best Christmas family-wise that we have was that Christmas there. And our kids didn't get a thing.
By the way, if you heard Jim White, and you're not interested in giving, you just need to check your pulse. After you plug the hole, you need to start bailing. You need to pay off the debt. You need to get rid of it. Get it gone. This is out of Dave Ramsey's stuff, Debt Snowball. I'm sure a lot of other people use it too. Basically what you do is you list your debts from smallest to largest, dollar amount. Okay? Make minimum payments on everything. Get as much extra money as you can, attack the smallest dollar one. When the smallest is fully paid, you're going to roll that amount that you were paying onto the next smallest one, and so forth. Okay, so if you look at this, I've got three stages there. So in stage one, you have three debts, pennies, car, and a Visa. You pay your minimum monthly payments of $100, $200, $300, but you attack the smallest one with everything you can scrounge up. Okay. At the end of 6 months, that first one's paid off. Now you only have two debts. Now you actually have an extra $500 to attack the car. 13 months later, it's gone. Now you have an extra $200, $100, $400, $700 to attack that Visa thing that was hanging over your head. And in 28 months, you're paid off. I have a relative whose husband had tens of thousands of dollars in debt, unbeknownst to her. And the thing was just crushing to them. Not only was there this huge overhang of financial obligation going on, but communication and some things like that. We visited, and I was able to walk them through basically a debt snowball. And they were able to pay off tens of thousands of dollars in debt in about 3 years' time, if my memory serves me correct. And his income was like $25,000. He got an extra job. They didn't spend anything frivolously, and they just attacked it. And in 3 years' time, 3-4 years' time, they'd paid off $40,000 in debt. Since then, they've been able to buy a house that had some more room in it, but they were able to do it wisely. Since then, they've had more children in their family, and they're able to take care of them financially. But they were able to get rid of that debt because they were able to attack it intensely. I'll just mention a couple things that I think that we've done well in our family. And I'm saying this just because it can be done. Okay? We lived on my income. After we were married for a year, my wife worked for 2 years. During those 2 years' time, our budget was still my income. Because we knew that someday my wife would be staying home, would want to stay home and have kids. We lived on my income the whole time, even when she was working. We used that money, we saved it, we set it back for other things. We were able to go to Hawaii on a vacation. We paid for the whole thing with cash. We bought a car with cash, a car that had 40,000 miles on it, that we drove until it had 197,000 miles on it. But we paid cash for it. And then my wife was able to stay home whenever the time came, and nothing else changed because we were living on my income and only my income. My principal, our principal at the time, tracked me down and said, I understand she wants to stay home. That's great, but she'll be back because you can't live on a single teacher's income with kids. Well, that's been 11 years now. And she hasn't gone back to teaching high school. Okay? We have no debt other than our house. We buy older vehicles. Already mentioned that. We bought an older house. We invest for retirement. Okay? We save for our kids' college fund. We're able to invest when the market is down. Now, I don't do market timing, but I know right now there's some eggs that are on sale that I'm getting ready to buy. Okay? And I only invest in mutual funds. If you want to talk to me about that stuff, that's fine. It's not going to be an investing workshop today. But I only invest in mutual funds. And right now the market's down, but I've got enough money floating around that I'm able to take some and put a little bit extra in my kids' college fund or our retirement fund and those things. Giving. One of the best decisions I made for our family was whenever we were newly married and we're trying to figure out our budget early on. And I'm like, well, we need to give some. I think we ought to give here. And my wife's like, man, I'm kind of uncomfortable with all this because you're a teacher and we're poor. I think we ought to give here. Instead of me putting my foot down and saying, no, by golly, we're doing it my way because I'm the leader of the house and you're going to do what I say. I said, okay, well, let's come right about here, right about where you are, maybe a little bit higher. I think it was the best decision I ever made for my family. She knew I valued her input and I wasn't just going to run over her. Okay? The other thing that I think is so amazing about it is she's much more of a giver now than I could even possibly be. She is so generous with her resources, with her money, with her time, with every aspect of it. She's a giver. And I think it's because I didn't just squash her along the way because, by golly, we're going to give this amount. Let me challenge you, and Jim already challenged you on giving, but let's say you're not giving as much as you would like. Okay? And we'll look at some verses here in just a minute. But let me challenge you a way to think about increasing your giving. Every time you get a raise, give half of it away. Find a way that you're going to increase your giving to your church or somebody that you're going to support or a child you're going to sponsor through Compassion or some other organization. Okay? When you get a raise, consider half of that raise you're going to give. The other half we'll use in our budget. That'll help to bring up your giving amount pretty quickly. The other thing that I think that being wise with your finances helps with is you can answer the call. When your buddy sends you an email and says, hey, there's a guy overseas, he needs some extra money. And he's a missionary over there, trying to wrap some stuff up. He needs some extra money. Okay, let's do it. Sit down with your wife, talk about it. I think it's a good choice. We use cash, already mentioned that. And the other thing that I think is important here is to kiss it. Keep it simple, stupid. Okay? If you don't understand, if you're a person that's trying to sell you a whole life policy and you don't understand it, just walk away. Find somebody that can explain it to you well. Okay? Come talk to me. I'll talk you out of buying it. We're going to take a look at a passage in Genesis chapter 41. Genesis 41, 14 through 39. Okay. We'll split this up just a little bit. 14 through 24 first. If I could have somebody that likes to project with a loud voice. 14 through 24.
Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I've heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it's not me. It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph. In my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile. And behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. And lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them. But they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears, full and good, came up on a single stalk. And lo, seven ears, withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me.
Okay. 25. You can pick up on 25 through 39.
All right, let's go. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. Seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt, and after them 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of the subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve of the land for the 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants.
Okay. Verse 39. What's 39 say? Scott.
So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are.
Okay. Somebody else read verse 39. Different translation, something.
Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all these known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you.
Okay. Anybody else got verse 39? I need to hear 39 one more time.
And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath shewed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art.
Why'd they call him wise?
Discerning.
He was discerning?
Because God showed him that.
God showed him it. Do you think it was because God showed him the dream? Showed him the consequences. Okay? It's kind of interesting because he's saying here, you're discerning and wise, not just because now you figured out the dream. And this guy's a plan of action. He's got a plan. The lean times are coming. Okay? If I told you that 5 years ago, the lean times are coming, you might look at me and go, what? Lean times are here for a lot of people. 5 years ago, were you planning for the lean times? Or were times good enough that you could justify to yourself, I can borrow against my 401k. It's no big deal. I can buy this car. It kind of fits in my budget. I can make those payments. It's no big deal. Okay? You need to plan for those lean times. Okay, we're going to take a look at some verses here. Here's my instructions to you on these verses. Sure. I do not want you trying to figure out my answer. Okay? Do not go, I wonder where he put this one. He seems like he's this type of person. I bet he put it here. Okay? Don't do that. This is not a verse analysis. Do not outline this verse. Do not underline the subject once and the predicate twice. Okay? This is gut reaction. When you read this verse says, bam, to you. Okay? I broke it down into four categories here. Four categories that I have are our restraint, what we shouldn't do, our responsibility, what we should do, our attitude, how we view our possessions, our comfort, what we realize about our possessions from God. Okay? What I want you to do is just very, very quickly, I mean, you're going to have 30 seconds per verse. You guys kind of get back together again here in just a second. Let me explain what's going on. Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is slave to the lender. So I read that verse and I think, borrow is slave. Man, that speaks to me right now. I think that talks about what we shouldn't do. We shouldn't be borrowing money. We will become a slave to our lender. So you notice right there, I put down the reference. Proverbs 22:7, borrower is slave. I move on. Okay? The other thing is you might see a verse where the first half of the verse you think fits in one category and the second half of the verse fits in another category. No, you thought too much. What was your initial gut reaction? Was your initial gut reaction that it talked about our responsibility? Or was your initial gut reaction that it talked about our attitude? Pick one, put it there, don't dwell on it. You can go back later and study it all you want. This is gut reaction, okay? So just right there in your groups, if you'll split it up, you'll be able to read through faster.
So you read the passage when you put it in this
manual. Yep, you read each of those verses, and you're going to put one verse wherever it goes, and you're going to put it in one of those four categories. That's it. Okay, guys, back up here. Okay. We're getting close to being done here. And I know that some groups finished. If you're in this part of the room right in here, you were either the people that followed instructions really well or thought the least because you all finished very quickly. Great, you did exactly what I asked you to do. Interpret that how you want. I want to go over just a few of these quickly. Proverbs 25:16, in light of us getting ready to go eat. Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. Some of us overeat. I did this weekend many times. Okay. Some of us spend too much money on food. Okay. Proverbs 20:13. Some of us need to get off our fannies and actually work. Okay. Open your eyes, you will be satisfied with bread. Get up in the morning, go to work. As far as storing things up, that was brought up. Proverbs 21:20. In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but the foolish man devours all he has. Do you use everything up that you have? Or do you plan for that rainy day? Because it's going to rain. It may be raining on you right now. Okay? I think it's very biblical and very wise. Joseph did it. Joseph knew the rainy days were coming. What did he do? He stored up. I'm not talking about hoarding, but I'm talking about getting ready for those rainy days because they're going to come. Just because you don't know when that next rainy day is going to be doesn't mean it's not out there. Okay? Joseph had a little bit of advance warning, but it's coming. Let's take a look at stewardship. 1 Corinthians 4:2. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. Steward means it's not your money. It's not your stuff. You're managing it for God. Okay? You're a steward. It's not your stuff. Reemphasize that point. Psalm 50:10. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Your hill, the cattle that are on your hill. Does God own those? Or does he only own 1 out of 10 of them? It's his hill. It's his hill and it's his cattle on it. Yes?
I've been guilty of this before and just thought I'd bring it up, but I know that a lot of times people might have tendency when their income decreases or in difficult times to increase their giving. And I think maybe kind of like your emergency fund idea might be a good idea to say, hey, you know what, this is all God's. And rather than if my income decreases by 25%, don't decrease my giving to try to make up for, you know, the lack of income.
Yeah.
Try to work it, you know, maybe you don't spend as much money somewhere else.
How's that little girl in Uganda or overseas feel? Whenever you go, oh, I just lost my job and I'm going to move and I'm taking 75% value on my job that I had, now I'm going to cut her. No, she's gone. I'm not going to support her anymore. That's pretty rough.
I mean, the thing about it is God funds his work with his money.
It's his money.
Out of your increases.
Yeah.
Nothing that you stored, say, out of your increase.
Psalm 24:1 verifies that all is God's. Psalm 95:4 does the same thing. When we look at 2 Corinthians 9:8, 2 Corinthians 9:6 and 7 is great. It's on little cards. We memorize them. Part of the TMS. 2 Corinthians 9:8 is great. All grace abounds for you. All sufficiency in all things. Okay, the grace is there. It's abounding for sufficient things. Sufficient things. The abundance at the end of that verse is there for every good work. When you have an abundance, do you use that money for good works, or do you use it to go buy your boat? God says that the abundance that he gives you is given to you for good works, not for your boat or whatever else it is. And if you have a boat, fine. Okay? But that verse says that the abundance is there for every good work. Proverbs 11:24 and 25 was quoted this morning by Jim White. It may have been last night. It's amazing how a dichotomy, dual view this thing is. The generous soul will be made rich. Okay? So I think there's a lot of things there to look at and see these different areas of what our attitude ought to be. It's all God's. It's all God's. Not the 10% I'm going to give or the 5% or the 2%. It's all God's. Our responsibility. We have a responsibility to provide for our family. Your wife wants you to be actively managing the money that God has entrusted to you. Okay? If you have never been actively managing your money, start. Your wife will be amazed. You will be a prince in her eyes. Okay? Whenever we look at our restraint, bad decisions in bad times are usually still bad decisions in good times. Just because times are good does not mean that financial principles are there to be broken. Okay? Borrowing is a dumb idea if there's a lot of money flowing and if there's not a lot of money flowing. So just be aware of that. A couple more things here. Whenever we talk about money, it's important to pray. Pray with your wife before you sit down and do your budget. Pray about what you're going to do with the money. All of the money, because it's all God's anyway. Live within your means. Okay? If you make X, don't spend X plus one. Okay? That's algebra for you all. couple things real quick as far as ideas that help our family save money. We pay cash for a lot of things. If we go out to eat, we pay cash. You will spend 18% less because it hurts more. Okay? It hurts more whenever you see those green backs float, or green and purple backs there flowing out of your hand. Hand-me-down clothes. I went to the store, the thrift store, within the last month, bought a pair of shoes that I wear at work, dress shoes that I wear at work, paid $2 for them. I appreciate the guy that paid $60 for them. Okay? Be in a position to buy when sales come. Okay? That's managing your finances well. Did you know at Walgreens, if you use a coupon, a merchandise coupon, if they have a store coupon, you can use both of them on the same item? Really? Yes. Yes, exactly. If you combine coupons, you can actually get enough money back to do that. Now,
and there's things you didn't ever think Walgreens would have.
Yeah. Now, I will point out one of my other things here is just because it's a bargain, don't buy it. Not buying things is something that we do because they're a bargain, but because you need them and they are a bargain. Okay? I have some people that I know that get themselves very hurt financially because they're buying so many bargains and saving themselves so much money. Okay? Don't be one of them. Teach your kids. Proverbs 22:6 talks about train up a child in the way he should go. Proverbs 22:7 talks about finances. The rich rule over the poor. One of the things you need to teach your kids is finances. Okay? Wife cutting the kids' hair. Birthday gifts and Christmas gifts we already talked about. Cell phones, TV, and entertainment packages. When I visit with people about their finances and they're struggling, we look at their entertainment package. Cell phones, TV, internet stuff. It's amazing how much money they spend on that, but yet they're having trouble putting food on the table or making their house payment. Okay. Share meals. If my wife and I go out to eat, we usually share a meal. Pop at restaurants. They rip you off. Okay? Go to the corner store, slug down a Dr. Pepper, then go eat. Okay? Don't buy the pop at the restaurant. Saying no when the envelope is empty. So when my friends say, hey, you want to go out to eat for lunch after church? Nope. Can't do it. Okay? They'll get over it. They'll get over it. Okay? In fact, they'll go, all right. Unless they're paying. You want to buy? Sure. Walmart will price match. Big Lots, you can buy expired cereal at. Now, I'm not talking about 7 years expired. Okay. Did you know you can freeze cereal and it'll stay good? So you go buy 10 boxes of expired cereal that cost you 60 cents a box. That would normally cost you $2.50 or $4 a box.
Okay?
I have a deep freeze. Yes. Yes, yes. It also holds part of our deer meat that we get. Powdered milk. Okay? I grew up on powdered milk. We don't always feed our kids powdered milk. I have a friend, he said, mix it. Half powdered milk, half regular milk. Kids will drink it. Your wife might not drink it, but your kids will drink it. But anyway, there are lots of ways out there, lots of places to get help. I'm going to close this in prayer. One thing I want you to do is I want you to fill out those workshop evaluation forms, okay? There's a box at the back to put it in. I'm a teacher. I take instruction and criticism and critiquing well because I want to become a better teacher. So when you fill those things out, if you have things that you say, man, this could have gone better here, or man, I really liked it when we did this, put it down. I read each of these, okay? So give me some feedback on this stuff. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you, Lord, that these guys were willing to sit here and listen about finances. And I pray, Lord, that the things that we said, that it would just penetrate into their heart, that they'd be able to take with them the information that is good, they'd be able to share it with their wives, and they'd be able to put things into place. Thank you, Lord God, for loving us. And as we give and we become givers, that we recognize that you are ultimately the ultimate giver in giving your Son, Jesus Christ, to us. That you also give us the grace that we need to live day by day. Thank you, Lord, for loving us. In Jesus' name, amen.